Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of the Horsemanship Journey Podcast. I'm Shane Jacob, your host, and I thank you for taking your time to be here with us today. Today, we're proud to present Sophie Delaurier. Sophie is a love and money coach. She helps people heal from the past, reclaim their power, attract love, and build the wealth that they deserve. She recently redefined her focus to support women to heal the relationships they have with themselves, reinvent themselves and how they show up, and heal from heartbreak, feel in control again, ooze confidence, feel sexy, attract their perfect match, and build life on their terms. I think what you have is going to apply to men and women today. Sophie, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Right on. Well, let me just tell you this. I read your introduction and your letter when you reached out to us. And usually I skim those things. And when I read it from the first word to the last word. I was taken in with your story. And I'm taken in your story because it has, your story has a lot of, your story has a lot of resistance in the beginning that you've overcome, and it's an incredibly interesting story. So I'm hoping maybe you can just begin at the beginning as you, as a teenager or young, wherever you want to begin, and kind of just walk us through how your early time.
Sure. So I think it's important that I go back to early childhood because my parents divorced when I was two. And the reason that's important is because I feel that many humans don't really fully take into account the kind of abandonment that gets created when parents divorce, especially when the child is such a young age. And the reason I'm saying that is because later in life, I started to understand what that abandonment wound actually manifested into for me. And so while we could start at my teenage years, I think that that's a really important piece, just to preface the whole context of what we're going to talk about today. So my parents divorced when I was two. In my early years, I'm going to give you some highlights. And then if there's something I say you want me to unpack a little bit more, I'll unpack it a little bit more. But there's a lot of detail I'm not going to necessarily go into. My parents divorced when I was two. When I was about 10 years old or so, my mom had an accident. She was electrocuted. So she was a daycare educator. It was a birthday party or they were taking some form of picture. And back in the day, so I'm 48, so imagine I was 10, 38 years ago. Pictures were taken, the flash, it was like an old style camera. You put like the manual flash on top and then you plugged it into the wall. And unfortunately, the electrical outlet was faulty and she had her bare feet wrapped around a metal stool. And if you know anything about electricity, it grounds in metal. So the current, she was electrocuted, the current went through her hand and then all the way through her body and it stopped in her feet, which were wrapped around the metal stool. And it blew her feet up like 7 or 8 times the size of her normal foot because of the way the electricity impacted her body. The people knew that she had a heart condition, so they checked out her heart. Her heart had stopped, so they called an ambulance, and her heart ended up not being the issue. The issue was that she was rendered disabled. She couldn't walk for 5 years. She went from... They had to make customized boots for her. She went from, you know, back in the day too, when you had a cast, they had like a cast boot around the actual cast. She had to wear those as shoes because her feet were so swollen from the accident. And then she went into customized shoes and she went from a wheelchair to crutches to canes to finally being able to walk again and then finally being able to wear normal shoes. And so that process, when I was like 10 years to... 16, 17 years old, was a pretty traumatic experience for me. And it's one of the highlights in my life that starts to show you the type of trauma that I went through. So there was the divorce and then there was that. Then my father was not in the picture for most of my life. We had short visits 1 or 2 times a year, but there was a long period of time between the ages of like 9 and 16-ish or so, or maybe it was more like 13 to 19, something like that. My memory is a little foggy now, where he was just not in my life. And my mom had remarried. She married an abusive alcoholic. So there was that was going on in the home. And then I went to university about like a normal person around 18, 19 years old. So I started working full time when I was 13. Went to university. I took environmental resource studies. And I was an entrepreneurial type individual. So I opened up a business called College Pro Painting. They have that across North America, where college students or university students open up a franchise and then they get assigned a territory and they go knock on doors and ask. At the time, it was the man of the house who was more responsible for that type of activity, like painting the house. And so, you know, you bid the house, you bid the project, and then you execute and you paint. It all sounds fantastic, except for with this type of franchise model, I started about $10,000 in debt, and I was already an OSAP child at that time because my parents didn't have the money to put me through school. So I had an OSAP loan, and then I was ambitious and entrepreneurial. So I started this business, and you start $10,000 in debt. And what they did, they signed me this community, and it's in Old Guelph here in Ontario, which is a very wealthy community. They thought, you know, because I was an astute and intelligent young lady with this articulate way of communicating, I would do well with wealthy people. Oh, what they didn't know is I was afraid of heights. So these old Victorian four-story homes posed a little bit of a challenge for my fear. And I felt I felt inadequate because I came from very humble beginnings. And then, so now we're putting me into these homes with these wealthy people where I feel not good enough and I'm afraid of heights. That wasn't really a very good fit for me. And I remember these clients, the men of the house, would want me to climb a ladder to check out their soffits to see if the soffit was rotten or not, to determine whether it needed to be replaced before it needed to be painted. And I was just like, you want me to do what? So I got smart. I hired a professional painter, and then he would bid the job for me so that I knew what my fixed cost would be. And then I would go to the principal in the home, mostly the men, and I would upsell from there. And then I had a fixed cost. I would know what my margin would be, how much money I was going to make. And then that's how I pulled myself out of that situation. But that was a challenge. Went through university. After university, I started a business. It was a spa, an anti-aging spa. And you know what most people do when they are a hairdresser or they're a spa? They go work for somebody, they build a clientele, they leave, and then they bring their clientele with them. I did not do that. I worked at a spa. I liked the model. I went outside of the geographical territory. I had a partner. We opened the spa. We had no clients. We had a $250,000 line of business loan. And we started marketing, and we did well. Within 6 months, we started making $50,000 a month. But 3 years into the business, with the biggest growth years behind us, too much overhead, I ended up going bankrupt. From there, I promised myself I would learn everything I needed to learn about business. I was already a good salesperson, but I up-leveled my skills around that. And I wanted to become a coach. So I went and took a bunch of coaching certificates. And then I started coaching and training sales teams and sales leaders across North America. So I was traveling all across North America, working with Fortune 500 companies, specifically teaching them sales process, sales mindset, sales communication skills, how to open the call, how to identify needs, how to close the call. And then with the leaders, I was teaching them how to coach. So how do you coach for performance rather than just tell your people what to do? That's a big distinction for leaders. But at the age of 39, I burnt out. I ended my consulting, one of my big consulting jobs finished. I ended it there. At that time, I was married. I was married about 18 years or so. I got married young. I was about 23 when I was married. So I took a couple of years off just to figure out what was my new direction going to be. And I had these big existential questions, like, is there more to life than, you know, making money? At the time, my ex-husband and I had built a multi-7-figure business. We were doing well. As you can hear from my story, I came from pretty much nothing and built my way through it. And, fast forward a couple of years, we realized that it was time for us to consciously uncouple. The marriage was no longer a fit for either of us. It was a toxic marriage, if I was being completely honest with you. And we went through a divorce. 6 months into the divorce process, I found a lump in my left breast. I went and got a biopsy. And unfortunately, because I had breast implants, we had to get a radiologist to do it. It wasn't just a simple process. The results came back inconclusive. So I had to go in for a full lumpectomy, which I did. It came back stage one breast cancer. At this point in time, I was 42 years old. And I had repartnered and fallen deeply in love with a younger man. And was scared, to be honest with you, of I didn't fully know what my treatment protocol was going to be. They needed to send my a sample of my my lumpectomy to the States to figure out some stuff out. And I can remember when the results came back, you know, they wanted, I was not a candidate for chemo, but I was a candidate for 25 radiation treatments and 2 years of tamoxifen at the age of 42. And the gift that cancer gave me is I had the opportunity to really reprioritize what was important to me in my life. And so I was asking myself, like, what do I want? And something I wanted but suppressed for a very long time was the desire to be a mother. At 42, I had less than a 5% chance of getting pregnant because of my age. I was considered a geriatric woman, unfortunately, but you know, I get it. My eggs, it's just a shelf life to your eggs. And yes, it's totally possible to get pregnant in later life, but let's just be honest, it's not probable. Possible, but not probable. So I asked the doctors, and I think it's really important for anybody who's going through this type of diagnosis. Like when you get told you have cancer, it's one of the most scariest things that I think a human being could hear, because you think about the food chain, disease and weaponry are the two things that gets humans. You know, we're pretty much at the top of the food chain until you're told you got cancer. And then it's like you face your mortality. So I asked the doctor, and this is, you know, your brain just doesn't necessarily connect the dots. It's not so easy to ask questions. It's not so easy to process information when you're in that level of fear. And I'm lucky, I'm strong, and I have the background that I have, and I know how to ask tough questions. So I said to the doctor, I said to the radiologist first, if I choose not to do radiology, what are the chances the cancer comes back? They said, well, you know, you're young. I was 42. Women live till their 80s. There's a chance cancer could come back just because of the amount of years that I had left. And so that left me with a 30% chance that the cancer could come back. And if I did radiation, it would reduce the chance of cancer coming back by 15%. To be honest, I really didn't think this was a big decrease in chances. So I said, what if I change my mindset? I change the way I eat. I change my lifestyle. I change a whole bunch of things. She said, we don't take that into consideration. She actually just walked out of the room. So I went back to my oncologist, and I was just like flabbergasted, to be honest with you. And I said, what are the chances the cancer comes back systemically if I do nothing? And he says, well, Sophie, that's a completely different spreadsheet. I said, well, could you please get that spreadsheet out? Because I'd really like to know what my chances are. And he pulls the spreadsheet out and says, okay. He says, if you do nothing, you have an 89% chance cancer does not come back systemically in 5 years. It goes down to 82. 5 years after that, it's going to go down to this and like this. I said, just hold up. You're telling me if I choose to do no treatment, I have an 89% chance that cancer doesn't come back. And then every 5 years, it goes down by a certain number of percentage. He goes, yeah. And I said, and you're telling me if I do treatment, it's going to reduce my chances of the cancer come back by 15%. He said, yes. I go, I'm so sorry, but am I crazy to think that I have pretty good odds here to bet on myself? Like if I have an 89% chance it doesn't come back and I completely change my lifestyle, my habits, my behaviors. He goes, you know, Sophia, I will back you up on that one. I said, okay, because I want to have a baby. He said, to be honest with you, with your type of cancer, having a baby is going to increase your estrogen, which is a risk for the cancer to recur. We have to have a conversation about what we would have to do if you were a pregnant woman and the cancer came back. And I said, I'm willing to take that chance. I lived a pretty big life. I had a house in Miami. I used to drive around in Lamborghinis. I had a 10-house portfolio. Like, I lived a big life. Like, there's nothing else I want than to have the opportunity to be a mother. So 8 months after my lumpectomy, my partner and I tried for a baby. We got pregnant our first try. I now have a 3.5-year-old son. I just passed my 5 years cancer-free in May of this year. And I got back into mentoring and coaching again because I know the difficulty it is to leave a toxic marriage, to get divorced after 18 years, to look at cancer in the eyes, to follow your heart. And I had a real life reminder of you can either follow and choose your fears in life, or you can follow and choose your dreams in life. And whichever you choose is going to come for you. And so you put your intention on your fear, or you put your intention on your dream. And that's where I'm at.
Sophie, let me interrupt you. That is so incredible. There's one piece that I read about that, and that was that, you slightly mentioned early on that your mom remarried an abusive alcoholic, and you also, I believe that you were going from women's shelters. And yep. So, I mean, you had to have experienced so much fear as an early teen in your teenagers, as a teenager, and then bankrupt, and then divorce after 18 years. And then now this cancer scare, which, I mean, like you said, I mean, what is more besides a weaponing cancer? What is going to take us down? And now here's cancer looking you in the eye. It had to be so chaotic and so like emotion packed, filled this yeah. decision of when like death is looking you, you're living this big life and death is potentially looking you in the eye. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about the, you know, how you derived at the decision a little bit more of like the things that you experienced previously led you to make that decision. And then I wonder if you talk a little bit more about that.
The decision to not do treatment?
Yeah.
So I started doing personal growth and personal development with a company called Landmark Education back in 2003. So more than, 20 some odd years ago. Human performance has been my passion. Taking radical responsibility is something I was used to doing since I was 20. I knew I had a say. I knew that I have a partnership with the universe. And I knew to bet on myself. I also read a book. I think my future self put it into my pathway when I was younger, called You Can Change Your Brain by Norman Doidge. And I read how people were healing themselves of blindness. And I'm like, if somebody can heal themselves of blindness, I can do this with cancer. People are healing themselves every single day of radical illness. And so I believed that it was possible. I didn't need to be certain. I just needed to know it was possible. And the possibility of it was enough for me to put all my intention towards that. And I just pulled for that. I got in alignment with that and I pulled for that. And I was okay if my cards would have gone different. But every day I was like, universe, show me the way. Universe, show me the way. Universe, show me the way. And then just took it one step at a time.
That is awesome. But when you... right before I interjected, you were talking about people. You can either focus on your fears or you can focus not on something else. You want to go on with that a little bit? Because I think a lot of us are living a small life and we're focusing on our fears and maybe a little bit too much. And I think at the end of the road, if we're not careful, if I'm not careful, if we're not all careful, if we're not intentional, maybe that we're going to end up saying, damn it. I squandered my time and I was not living my as big as I could have because I was living too much in my fear. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So being married for 18 years, I had lots of fears, right? You know, as any human would, like to leave a marriage is like fear of failing, fear of making a mistake, fear of being alone, fear of being financially destitute, fear of being embarrassed, fear of being judged. And I just got to a point where I either let my fear win, or I also got to a point where I started to fear regret more than I feared all of that. And I wanted the opportunity to know myself as somebody who went for the full life that I came here to get. And that life I was living was something I wanted when I was young, you know, and it's a lot of what society tells you is what success looks like. You know, you make your money, you get your big house, you build your real estate portfolio, you drive around in a fancy car. Like, those were all the things that were programmed into my mind. And so, like, I was conforming to what society told me would make me happy or successful. And when I got there, it was my, like, that wasn't happy for me. And I started to want to know that I could follow my heart and try something different. And I had the courage. I made the decision. My life is not going to go this way anymore. And I had the insight, the foresight to look into my future and see what was going to be there for me if I didn't make a change. And so I didn't want that. And I was young enough to have a completely different life. I still had time. And I wanted to give that to myself. And so I took the leap of faith and I made the jump. Right, and it was scary.
Right on. You talk a little bit about reclaiming your power and the gifts that you can get from reclaiming your power. Tell us about that.
Well, I think that for most of us, we give our power and we don't know what we're giving our power away to. We give our power away to our thoughts, our fears, our doubts, our insecurities, the way society has conditioned us to live. You know, this thing called gender roles, like that's a conditioned social construct that just causes a lot of women to have anxiety. The anxiety leads to inflammation. Inflammation leads to autoimmune diseases and, you know, also cancer. So we have to start to realize that the only force that's going to give us what we really want in life is ourselves. And that's about taking the power back. Stop letting our fears win. Stop letting our thoughts win. Stop letting our doubts win. Stop letting our insecurities win. And actually be in the moment, making a conscious decision moment to moment, a conscious choice moment to moment that lines up to the future that you really want. Otherwise, we're going to live a life by habit, not a life by design, a life by programmed, like by society's programming, rather than a life on our terms.
Right on. What about this emotional regulation? What does that have to do with our personal power?
So we get triggered in life as human beings. You know, your parents are probably one of the people that trigger you the most. Your children are probably one of the people that triggers you the most. And it's like this. Okay. So when somebody goes through a divorce, it's emotional chaos. And if you are unable to regulate your emotions, that version of you who's in emotional chaos is going to lash out, become defensive, be blaming, have a victim mindset. It's not going to show up great at work, not going to show up great in the relationships, not going to show up great when you're trying to attract new love again. So the more you can regulate your emotions, you are in control. Not you. You have your emotions. Your emotions don't have you. None of us want to show up like a five-year-old throwing a temper tantrum in life. I don't believe that. It's just our emotions can be so overwhelming that we can't manage ourselves. So we show up in a way that's explosive. And then we go into a guilt and shame cycle, which sucks. And it's not good for our health.
Talk more about that guilt and shame cycle, because we all... men, women, I mean, yeah. Guilt and shame is just a part of this deal. So, I mean, what advice do you have for people that were experiencing a lot of shame and guilt?
So, okay. So I'm going to talk to shame first. So, I held a lot of shame when I left my marriage because there's just so much stigma around the divorce and leaving a marriage and failure. I had shame around coming from a humble beginning of a childhood. I had shame around those sorts of things. When you can own your shame, you have your power. Like, who's to say that I'm a failure because I left an 18-year marriage? That's so ridiculous, right? But it's a modern thought. So I own my shame. I chose to no longer live a life that wasn't making me happy, to make myself happy. There's power in that. So you choose if you are following societal standards or you're living life on your terms. Societal standards is going to make everyone feel like shame, in my opinion, you know, but you're living on your terms. You have your power back. Guilt is one of the most useless emotions to experience because it's going to keep you in a disempowered state. That's going to keep you giving your power away. Guilt is going to keep you small. So the moment you can acknowledge that you showed up like a five-year-old, It's not the way you want to show up, and you can get into communication and own it and repair the relationship with whoever you lashed out on. You take your power back, and then you start to learn how to regulate your emotions so that the next time you're triggered, it doesn't occur the same way. Like the same story doesn't play out in the same way. You take your power back, because I don't believe as humans, we want to be showing up and being guilty and shaming ourselves for it, you know? There's what the way you're being shamed by society, but then when you show up a way you don't want to, you shame yourself. That energetic angst from guilt and shame in the body creates anxiety. Anxiety is the precursor to inflammation. Inflammation leads to all the autoimmune diseases and cancer. So guilt and shame are emotions that are going to make you sick. So stay out of those emotions.
Right on. I love your passion. I could ask you so many questions. We could go on for such a long time. It's amazing. You have a program, and I think it includes 6 modules, if I'm not right, 6 pieces of it. And, you know, I've used up a lot of this time that we've had here today with your story, where you come from, your perspective, which I think is extremely important. And you've talked a little bit about the transition, but, you know, the thing of it is, Sophie, I really don't think a lot of us can really visualize and see the other side. And so, yeah. I mean, that we just don't know what that it's possible for us to do. And one thing that I noted about your, when I read about you and the things that you do, is that you say, here's what it looks like on the other end of my deal, on the other end of my program. Here's what you can expect. So, I mean, is that really real? And what can people, is it available? Is this real? Can I make that happen? I mean, your story is pretty inspiring, but what I want to know is if that can be the same for me. Talk to me about that and what's on the other end of this.
I believe anything is possible for any human. I truly believe that. I've been in the work of transformation since I was 23 years old. I have seen people transform their lives, transform how they see themselves. I also believe you don't fully have to believe it. You have to start taking action in alignment with it. It's okay to have doubt. That's part of the human experience. I have doubt all the time. It's okay to have fear. I have fear every single day. But you know how I address my fear? Good morning, fear. I see you. Good afternoon, fear. Come along. I got something to show you. Good night, fear. Good game today. I won. Right? It's like, fear is part of the human experience. It comes along for the ride. You got to walk 1 foot in leadership and 1 foot in gratitude and just move forward with it. Hold fear's hand. Understand it. But if you let fear win, you're never going to get the transformation you're looking for. And so it's about making the shifts in your mindset and in your feelings and in your actions every single day that line up to what you want. And then what you're saying is people don't believe that it's possible. Well, I also think that it's that what's stopping them is they don't have a vision for it. Right. So sometimes it's about, I didn't fully know my vision after I got divorced. I didn't fully know it, but I had a sense from, so it doesn't sound so silly, but like watching movies, what I wanted, you know, you have to kind of see it. You look to people who have it already. If somebody else is experiencing it, it's possible. Now it's about you shifting and twisting and turning to be in alignment with that so the universe can deliver it. You have to be in a match for what you want. And that's the hard work, becoming the match.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And I don't think it's silly. I mean, developing our imagination and movies as a resource to be able to see what we want in the future, I think is a super good idea. That's a great strategy to me. Like I said, I have so much. I'm just getting started, but we don't have all day to be able to do this. But so let me ask you this. Before we kind of wrap this up, if you had a message for us today, take as long as you'd like to answer this, but what would you like to leave us with today after what we've talked about so far?
Anything you want for yourself in your life is possible. Anything you want for yourself in your life is possible. It takes a few things, and this is what I cover in my program. You have to create a vision for yourself. And listen, my vision is still unpacking. I don't have it all figured out. You don't have to have it all figured out. You need to take it one step at a time in alignment for what you want. You have to align your thoughts, your feelings, your actions. You got to be willing to walk in the face of fear and step through the fire. You just got to be willing to step into courage. It takes courage and leadership. And if you're willing to step into your courage and into your leadership and move in the direction of what you want, and you don't stop moving, you'll get there. Anything is possible. I truly believe that.
Awesome. Sophie, thank you so much for your story, for your vulnerability, for your time here today. Truly inspiring. I think we can all feel your feel the intensity in your heart. And so how can people find out about having you help them walk down their path?
The best way to find me is on my Instagram page. It's at the Sophie Delorier. So THESOPHIEDESLAURIERS.
Very good. Sophie, thank you again for taking your time to be with us today. We'll hope to talk to you soon. We wish you continued success. Ladies and gentlemen, Sophie Delorier.
Thank you so much.